great to see you this morning. And just to begin, I just want to ask you a question to share with your neighbor. What's your favorite movie prequel? You know, the ones where you get to see the hero's backstory. Just share that. What's your favorite movie prequel? Did anyone go for Batman Begins? Or Star Wars Rogue One? Or perhaps Monsters University? Or that recent one, Wonka? Anyone seen that? Lots of people seen that. I've not seen it yet. Heard it's great. Well, today is a bit like a movie prequel because we've recently finished a series on 1 Peter, the letter written by the famous disciple of Jesus. And today we're going to take a look back at Peter's life and what shaped him into the leader he became. So by the time he wrote the letter, Peter had become like a rock and an elder statesman in the early church, able to offer encouragement and wisdom to those who are new to following Jesus. So you might expect Peter's prequel to be kind of filled with stories highlighting his excellent character, his amazing leadership qualities. But the Bible's account of him doesn't paint that kind of picture at all. Instead, we find Peter, who is portrayed as very human and flawed. And sure, he has some amazing high moments, particularly when stepping out in faith. But we also find a Peter who's often faltering or confused or just plain afraid as he tries to follow Jesus. And in that way, though, Peter becomes the disciple we can all relate to. Because for all of us who try to live for Jesus, there are probably times when we lack courage. We take our eyes off him. We misunderstand his teaching, or we feel like we've blown it all together. Is that just me? You might really feel like that right now. And so the good news is that by putting ourselves in Peter's shoes, we can learn from him. We can find consolation in his mistakes and shortcomings, but we can also draw encouragement from how Jesus responds to his moments of failure. There are so many stories about Peter, but as we look at a few of his best known ones today, I'm going to focus on 3 threads that weave through them. First, Peter's faith. Second, Peter's failures. And third, Peter's transformation. So firstly, Peter's faith. A key episode at the beginning of Peter's journey is Luke chapter 5, which will come up on the screen if you want to follow along. Just a heads up, in this one, Peter is called by his other name, Simon. So let's read that. One day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge 2 boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they'd done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they'd taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on the shore, left everything, and followed him. You know, the Lake of Gennesaret, now known as Lake Galilee, is where Peter was from. In my 20s, I lived in Israel for 2 years and often visited the area. And there are many more hotels and spas right now, but it's much unchanged from 2,000 years ago. Little fishing boats still go out on the lake, now selling their catches to local restaurants on the menu now as St. Peter's fish, obviously. Okay, it might not always look that pretty, but with some hummus on the chips on the side, that is a delicious meal there. Their story was not actually Jesus and Peter's first meeting, though. The previous chapter of Luke tells us that Jesus had recently healed Peter's mother-in-law and even persuaded Peter to let him use his house as a base for his ministry. So before the miraculous catch of fish here, Peter would have been familiar with Jesus. You could say he kind of knew him, but he hadn't certainly decided to follow him. And some of you, I guess, might be in a similar place right now. Perhaps you've not been coming here for long, or it's your first time, and you're so welcome. Maybe you're familiar with Jesus, you've had some kind of encounter with him, but you've yet to decide to follow him. And if that's you, we're so glad you're here with us. Maybe you need some more time to get to know Jesus better. But I also believe there's an opportunity for you today to step into more of that commitment to know Jesus and follow him. And we'd love to pray for you later for that. After working through the night, though, Peter would have been tired. And I imagine after catching nothing, pretty grumpy. Now, Peter's livelihood was fishing, so he knew it inside out. So he knew that if you've caught nothing all night when fishing conditions are at their best, there's certainly no chance of catching anything during the day. So Jesus' words makes no sense here. There was no fish out there. Peter knew it. Everybody watching knew it. I think even the fish in the lake knew it too. But against all the odds, Peter responds with faith and Jesus performs this extraordinary miracle. Peter's faith here isn't spelt so much R-I-S-K, risk, which we often say, but more O-B-E-D-I-A. Okay, that's more tricky to do with that one. Obedience, okay? It's obedience. I doubt Peter felt super confident as he put those nets out again. But nonetheless, he simply did what Jesus told him. And so Peter becomes this kind of example for all of us who experience hearing Jesus and face the challenge of obeying what he says, however we might feel. Primarily, we hear Jesus through reading this book, the Bible, but we might hear him through the Holy Spirit speaking to us in dreams or visions or prophetic words, that kind of thing. Whatever the means, though, just like Peter in this story, what we hear the Lord saying might not make immediate sense. It might not be clear how Jesus' instructions will help us to get to where we want to go. It might even seem laughable or foolish to those around us. And this could be applied to so many areas of our life, but maybe you're facing one right now. Maybe it's in your finances as you consider what Jesus says about being generous, you know, in the cost of a living crisis. Maybe it's in relationships as you wrestle with God about what he says about keeping sex sacred for the context of marriage, when our culture sees the traditional view of marriage as outdated or perhaps contrary to our well-being. Or maybe it's more about where you feel God is specifically guiding you in your life at the moment. Some years ago, I remember I was working as an architect full-time, helping design large shopping centers. And it was a great job and things were going well, but I had this growing sense that God was prompting me to ask my boss to have a day off work each week to volunteer here. And then one Sunday around that time, I heard John Bodley do a talk, and he talked about asking for 2 days off a week from his engineering company. And so I resolved the next day to ask my boss this question. But while driving to work, my faith kind of just evaporated away. I didn't want to put my job at risk. I couldn't imagine my boss was going to be super happy with this idea, and it didn't really make any sense. When I got to my desk, though, I had a little devotional book at the side, you know, ones with a little sort of Bible passage and an explanation each day. I hardly ever read it, but I opened it that day and it started with, "The Lord opens doors." So I thought, oh, that's a bit of a boost. So I went to my boss and to my amazement, he said, "Ben, I don't think you've been put on earth to work here. So I'm sure we can make that work, yes." So over the next 18 months, I had this great setup of volunteering a day a week here and 4 days in architecture before moving to work full-time here, which is a whole other story. Now, there have been many times, though, when I've not done what I think the Lord is saying, but I'm so glad for every time I did. And if you're right now struggling with a specific area of obeying the Lord in your life, you know, we would love to pray for you that you'd have the gift of faith, just like Peter had in this story, however challenging or costly it might be. Back to the prequel, though. We can't move on from Peter's faith without mentioning a story in chapter 14 of Matthew. You know the story, the disciples, they're crossing the lake in a storm when they see Jesus walking to them on the water. They're already scared by the storm, and now Jesus appears strolling on the waves, and they're just freaking out. Of course, it's Peter who pipes up. "Lord, if it's you," he says, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," Jesus says. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You know, this amazing moment firstly showcases Jesus's divinity. He's fully God in human form. But if we focus on Peter, it's his courageous faith on display. This time, Peter's faith really is spelled R-I-S-K. And as the disciples inevitably told and retold these stories in later years, I wonder if there ever was a bit of banter, a few jokes around this episode. "Peter, do you remember that time you tried to walk on the water and then glug, 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 glug?" Peter would have had a good comeback though, right? "Sure, guys, I ended up getting soaked, but I'm the only one who actually walked on the water. And besides, I actually got out of the boat." It was risky faith. It was outrageous faith that enabled Peter to respond and join in with what Jesus was doing. And I think it's the same for us too. There are times when the Lord will invite us into something and our response needs to be just that, courageous and risky faith. And I wonder what that thing is for you right now. Years ago, I remember I was on holiday, family holiday with my brothers and my mum and dad in Ireland. We'd hired a boat on the River Shannon for a few days. And as we came into a little town called Athlone, I saw a group of teenagers skateboarding on the side of the river. They were sort of dressed in black hoodies, that kind of thing. So it looked quite intimidating. But I felt God say to me, go and share your faith with them. Immediately, I thought, no way. But after we'd moored up, I decided I could at least cross the bridge and walk past them kind of like a flyby. Seriously. But as I got closer, though, I just felt like, Lord, I need something more. And so I prayed, Lord, if this is you, give me an opening to start the conversation at the exact moment I walk past this group. And I'm not stopping or coming back. It's like a one-off. I'm going to try this. At that exact moment I walked past them, I heard one of them loudly say, London, which is where I was from. And I thought in my mind, to be fair, that is a technical opening. So I said, did you just say London? That's where I'm from. I know, it's pretty snappy, wasn't it? Bizarrely, it turned out, though, that some of the group went to the school at the end of my road, and I suspect it was them who left cigarette butts at the end of our drive. You know, everyone was amazed at such a coincidence. But after I explained it was a more of a God incidence for me, it was like an open goal to share my faith. And I remember a number of them encountered Jesus and invited him into their lives right there in that moment. You know, this morning, where is Jesus inviting you to trust him and figuratively step out of the boat, perhaps out of a place of security and comfort into what join in with what he's doing? Maybe it's sharing your faith in a risky way this week. Maybe it's sharing a specific word you think the Holy Spirit is giving you for someone in small group or that kind of thing. Maybe it's taking a risky step into that leadership role that you feel prompted about. Whatever it might be, Peter's example encourages us to leverage all the faith we can muster and step out of the boat. So that's Peter's faith, obedience and risk. Now let's look at Peter's journey with failure. The first thing that strikes me is before even Peter met Jesus, he would have no doubt already messed up many times. I think that explains Peter's response to Jesus in the story we read first. Do you remember when he fell at Jesus' feet and said, Lord, go away from me, I'm a sinful man? It's quite a reaction, isn't it? But I think that as Peter had a revelation of Jesus' power and his holiness, he just knew his sins and failures made him unworthy of staying in Jesus' presence. You see, Peter was not a devout or a religious man. He would have fallen short of God's perfect laws many times. And yet Jesus had come to choose imperfect people just like Peter, or imperfect people just like you and me, whatever our past failures or baggage might be. Jesus' choice of Peter is even more surprising when we consider the context 2,000 years ago. You see, it was normal for Jewish rabbis to recruit followers who would travel around with them, learn from them, and hopefully enhance their reputation. But if you were a rabbi picking your team, the obvious thing would be to choose the brightest and the best. Those who knew the whole Bible off by heart, who were spotless in their character, hopefully had a little bit of money behind them too. And Peter didn't tick any of those boxes. I wonder, though, if any of us might also have a background which, for one reason or another, we fear disqualifies us from being called or used by Jesus. There might be a particular sin or decision that you think will always kind of count against you. Or maybe something in your past makes you feel you'll always be on the fringes of Jesus' plans. But Jesus choosing Peter shows that nothing could be further from the truth. He was not looking for accolades or an unblemished track record when he invited Peter to follow him. And it's the same for us. After all, Jesus is the one who qualifies us as worthy to follow him by giving his life for us on the cross, not the other way around. So if we feel like falling at Jesus' feet because of past sins or mistakes, we're in good company. In that place, let's hear Jesus' encouragement to us as it was to Peter. Don't be afraid. Come, follow me. As Peter began to follow Jesus, though, his moments of failure didn't end there. There was a time when Peter told Jesus that his plan to give his life to save the world was a really bad idea. There was another time when Jesus was arrested by the Jewish authorities, when Peter took matters into his own hands and cut a guy's ear off, which Jesus promptly picked back up and put back on and healed. But Peter's most famous failure was his denial of Jesus on the night before his crucifixion. All four Gospels have the versions of the same story. Jesus tells the disciples they're all going to fall away and desert him. But Peter characteristically blurts out, "Lord, even if all the others fail, I shall not." Jesus, speaking just to Peter now, ramps it up a notch. "This very night, Peter, before the rooster crows, you'll disown me three times." Digging his hole even deeper, though, Peter insists, "Lord, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." Of course, a few hours later, it all goes to script. When challenged by those around him, Peter denies Jesus once, twice, three times, and the cock crows, and he flees the scene to weep bitterly. None of us are going to, of course, face that exact situation. But how many of us could say with confidence that we would have acted differently? After all, I wonder if many of us in different circumstances have said to the Lord something like, "Lord, I'll never do that," or "Lord, I'll never do that again." Is that just me again? In our worst moments, some of us might feel like we've fallen too far to come back to Jesus. We've messed up in the same way too many times to be forgiven again. And maybe someone here is feeling like that today. But if that's you, you're not alone, because that's exactly how Peter must have felt in that moment. And yet, Peter's greatest failure became his greatest experience of Jesus' love and grace. After Jesus had risen from the dead, he met Peter back where it all started, at Lake Galilee. Peter's fishing again, and he hears the familiar voice. "Friends, haven't you got any fish?" Jesus said. Of course they hadn't. "Throw your nets out again and you'll find some." I bet the fish were like, "Oh no, here we go again." As the nets began to fill, though, it's all too much for Peter, who jumps straight into the water, fully clothed, and swims towards Jesus. On the beach, they go on to have this amazing conversation where Jesus deliberately asks Peter three times, "Do you love me?" mirroring his three failures. It's a breathtaking moment of restoration and beautiful reminder to all of us that however far we think we've fallen, Jesus' grace goes further still. So that's Peter's faith and failures. And now finally, let's consider Peter's transformation, because the overall story arc of Peter's life is one of change. You know, we often use language here, "Come as you are, but don't stay as you are." And Peter's life is the perfect blueprint for this, because as he sticks with Jesus through the highs and the lows, Peter is transformed. And one clue to this is actually Peter's name. Before he meets Jesus, he's called Simon, a common name for Jewish men of the time. But when his brother first introduces Peter to Jesus, Jesus says, "You're Simon, son of John, but you will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. And this new name means rock, and Jesus chooses it deliberately with Peter's destiny in mind, for him to be transformed into the strong leader upon which the early church is built. Along the way, Peter has many of what you might call Simon moments. No offense if your name is Simon, it's a great name. But despite these, the old Simon fades away and the new Peter emerges. And the use of Simon actually gets less and less as you read through the gospel stories. And by the time we get to the book of Acts, the history of the early church, the use of Simon's gone altogether, and it's all Peter. It's a bit like this graph, I guess. Despite the highs and the lows, because of Jesus' grace at work, the direction of travel for Peter is clear. And the book of Acts sheds further light on Peter's transformation, because it tells us it's Peter who preaches the early church's first sermon when 3,000 people are swept into joining the church. It's Peter who performs the first healing miracle after Jesus is ascended. It's Peter who suffers beatings and persecutions for his faith but stays firm. And then according to earliest Christian tradition, Peter is ultimately martyred for his faith in Jesus under the Roman Emperor Nero. I guess there's a danger in showing a graph like this, though, because we could be tempted to think that forward progress is down to us, that we need to strive our way to become the person we ought to be. But just as with Peter, this transformation, it just simply isn't possible under our own steam. It's only through Jesus' grace weaving and working its way through our lives. Jesus' grace in calling us and giving us these new lives in relationship with him. Jesus' grace teaching us to step out in risky faith and obedience as we follow him. And Jesus' grace picking us up and rescuing us when we fall. So whenever we're tempted to doubt that grace, let's remember Peter's story. And let's look back at the cross where Jesus demonstrates it the most. You know, recently I've had the privilege of working on this new edition of Changing Lives, full of these amazing stories. And so I've invited one of the contributors to come and to share his story of Jesus transforming his life today. So let's welcome George as he comes. Hey, mate.
I was born into a loving family, but my parents were not Christian until my mother found her path to Jesus. As a child, I remember coming to Trent Vineyard a few times with her. Growing up, I faced numerous challenges, particularly at school, and there were times when I struggled with violent outbursts. I knew this couldn't continue, so I began to suppress my feelings, which ultimately led to intense anxiety. It got so overwhelming that I found it difficult to leave my own home. After school, I went to college, but after just a month, I left in a very dark place and unsure of where my life was headed. Fortunately, I found a job at a small marketing company, which brought some stability into my life. I began seeking answers to the meaning of life through podcasts, YouTube videos, and books. I've always been a systematic thinker, and discovering C.S. Lewis, the Christian author known for the Narnia stories, it was a pivotal moment for me. His book, The Screwtape Letters, opened my eyes to the spiritual realm. I also started listening to the Bible and found myself wanting to go deeper and deeper. To continue my spiritual journey, I returned to Trent Vineyard. At the beginning, I really didn't like to get the times of worship and singing, so I'd just come for the talk, which always spoke to me, but then I would leave. In an effort to build a circle of friends and continue my journey, I joined a small group. This is where I found a supportive community that helped me overcome my reservations about worship and prayer. Gradually over time, I came to realise the answers of my search of meaning were found in Jesus Christ. So I decided to follow Jesus and I got baptised, which was a significant milestone for me. Since then, my life has been transformed. I came to Trent Vineyard burdened by depression and loneliness, but I've discovered healthy ways to cope with these challenges. I haven't just found friendships, I found a family within the church, including a fiancé. The anxiety we used to weigh me down has nearly vanished. I'm now involved in serving others, volunteering on the kids' team, helping serve refreshments, and welcoming new people, all without the burden of anxiety. When I think back over my journey, I'm filled with such gratitude, how Jesus has changed my life. I've been blessed in ways I once thought were impossible, all because of God's amazing grace. I eagerly anticipate what the future holds, knowing that his plan is always better than I can ever imagine.
Wow, so amazing, isn't it, to hear about how Jesus transforms lives. And we're just going to spend some time responding together now. So can I invite you to stand if you're able as we do that? I think a couple of others are going to come and join me here.